Hello and welcome back to Common Room Conversations. I am Brendan White.
And my name is Chris.
And we are back this week to bring you guys another talk about upcoming movies that are coming to streaming services this coming couple months, actually. Yeah, we got within
Everything comes out very soon that we're going to talk about this week,
which is very exciting, and we can't wait to hear about what you guys are most excited for. Actually, now we have it for the very first time. We figured out how to do it. If you were listening on Spotify, you can take a poll and tell us, give us your feedback on what you're most excited to see. And this week, we'll be talking about The Book of Boba Fett, Morbius, Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City, and Sing 2.
I'm going to start off with scary shit and then move on to the family-friendly content.
And we hope you guys enjoy this episode this week.
All right, so the very first trailer we're going to talk about this week is Morbius, which comes out on January 28th, and it is interesting.
You're saying it's interesting because you do not like anything remotely scary.
Nope.
And
nope.
I guarantee you watched this trailer and you said, nope, fuck this. I'm good. But
I powered through it.
Yeah, you did.
This and the fucking other one, yep. My notes reflect that I did not enjoy it.
Yeah, I bet you didn't. I also agree that it's going to be very interesting because this is someone we've never seen, the Vulture from Tom Holland's Spider-Man Homecoming. We see him, and we see him interacting, not only in the recent trailer that just came out for Morbius, but the first trailer. We see him saying, oh, what's up, Doc, to him in the first trailer, and then we see him talk to him again and say, hey, Michael Morbius, we'll stay in touch. Now, my interpretation of Vulture from the end of Spider-Man Homecoming is that maybe he's not going to particularly be a villain to Peter Parker anymore, because I don't know if you recall at the end of the end credit scene, he had the opportunity to give away Peter's identity, and he didn't.
I saw that.
He didn't see it. He's in prison, and he gets a run-in with a guy whose alias is the Scorpion, who will probably most likely get a Spider-Man movie with Scorpion as a villain. And he said, word on the street is, you know who he is. And he said, if I knew who he was, he would already be dead. So he didn't give up Peter's alias as Spider-Man, which leads me to believe maybe that it's all about timing with this too. Maybe this could possibly take place before the Spider-Man movie coming out, and maybe that the Vulture could play a key. Maybe this was before the events that unfold in that, and maybe that the multiverse is split up. So now in his world, he's in the same universe. He mentions in the trailer that he is Venom as a joke, when he shows his fangs and shows his vampire face. So what really makes me to believe it is that the multiverse really did fuckies with his world. He's in the same universe as Venom, but then you also see in the trailer that he walks by a poster of Spider-Man that looks to be in the Sam Raimi Tobey Maguire suit from the original trilogy with Tobey Maguire. But then you also see the aspects of him referencing Venom, which is also Tobey Maguire, but it's also the new Venom movies that come out. And then you also see the Vulture, Michael Keaton's Vulture, and it leads speculation like, okay, will this take place during the events of No Way Home? Will it take place a little bit before, where the multiverse is just starting to crack open and everything is getting fucked with? Or will it be kind of a little like teaser into like the trailers saying like, oh, maybe this all takes place after the multiverse collapses and they really didn't do a good job of fixing it? Sony and Marvel were having disputes about whether or not they wanted to include Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield in the second trailer.
Well,
so that's why
it's taking
a while.
That Tom Holland, who is like notorious for giving secrets away, has actually said that they won't be in the movie.
Yes, but that's so long ago.
He like confirmed it again.
But that's also him going to be him trying to throw everybody off. You know, it's like him and Mark Ruffalo. Mark Ruffalo said it.
But he's not good at that.
No, Mark Ruffalo isn't either. And Mark Ruffalo threw us off so many times with this spoilers for Avengers with all that. Okay, but that's besides the point. You know,
we're talking about
Morbius. I'm very intrigued to see a villain at this caliber, especially because I really enjoyed watching the second trailer, because it showed off more of what Michael Morbius is actually going to be capable of. Because in the first trailer, we really only see him, uses sonar a little bit, and the sonar, like how the bats do. And then we see his, at the end of the first trailer, we see his face all fucked up and scary. But in this, we see him talk about how he has super strength, he has super speed, and how he has a sonar. And then you actually see in the trailer that he starts flying. And he also, it looks to me that he also has control of bats.
Yep.
Which is very, it's very intriguing. But, I lost my train of thought real quick.
Speaking of trains, he was flying in front of a subway train.
Flying in front of a subway train, yeah.
That was a pretty cool scene, I will say. I did enjoy the powers that he had.
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned the bats and the flying. Like, flying in front of that was a pretty cool scene of him, like, gliding in front of the subway train.
That was a very cool scene. One thing I will add to that, too. You know, did you see, like, right before in the trailer, a shot that I loved, right before he started flying, how he could hear the subways coming and his ears kind of like adjusted. Like they did like an effect where it, like his ears kind of like morphed.
Yep.
So he could hear far away. I thought that was super, super cool. And that just like seeing that visually was like, wow, he's like, his body's changing like ridiculous.
Yeah. The graphics were really cool in it. I always say graphics. It's effects. Yeah. But I could really tell it was a Sony movie. It's based on a Marvel character. But
yeah, all the product placements.
Every time, that's not what I was gonna say, but true. The Sony movies just have a vibe to them that, to me, just is like, this is a Marvel movie, but it gives DC vibes. Like every time I see a Sony Marvel movie, I feel like it's a DC movie.
Well, that's understandable, but to be quite honest, I feel as though that can only be justified with the last three, with like the big ones, because they went for a darker tone with the first two, with the first Venom's movies. So with Venom 1 and Venom 2.
Also, like, we've never seen Marvel have like horror tendencies except for in Sony movies. Like Venom and Carnage, those are both kind of like a little bit scarier tone.
I guess,
haven't seen that in a Marvel centric movie.
Well, there's a ton of horror that surrounds like some of the comics arches in Marvel comics.
That's not but in the movie universe.
You also got to remember though is that they can't really, because when Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness comes out, that's gonna be pushing horror. You got to remember Marvel's owned by Disney. They can't just throw a rated R horror movie. No, because that would get incredible backlash.
I mean, they can.
No, but I'm. I'm also very curious about Morbius because, like you said, like it's got the darker undertone to it, which I'm actually really happy that it does, because I could not imagine seeing a lighthearted Michael Morbius movie about a man bat that consumes human flesh and blood. I can't see a lighthearted movie about that. But
yeah. I don't think I want to see a movie based around this character, though. I feel like they probably had so many other choices.
Okay, you know what? No, because Morbius has a great...
That they could have had.
No, Morbius has had great comic book appearances and has great backstory. So I'll tell you what, I'll see the movie. I'm definitely going to see it, and I will let you know how it is.
I'll
buy your ticket.
I will still not. You'd have to pay me to see it.
I just told you I would.
A lot more than a ticket price. That shit would be like $1,000 for me to see that bullshit.
But I'm also curious to see with Morbius, because we do see that he has, especially with the scene where he's like talking about the thug, he's like, who are you? He's like, I'm Venom. And then his face appears as the vampire. He's like, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that was a funny little thing.
a lot of the trailer, he talks about how it's going to consume him and that he has this urge to hunt and consume blood. So what I'm very curious about is that...
Why do I get this feeling that this movie is just Venom over again?
No, it's not. You gotta really, really like sit down and analyze Venom, and you don't know because you're not gonna see this movie. But no, but what I'm really curious about is that, is he gonna be able to control it, or is there always gonna be a part of him that, you know, almost kind of like an alter ego kind of thing, and like a subconscious, like it kind of latched onto subconscious and really takes control as like almost another identity, where once he's in the form of the vampire, the man bat thing, he's not going to be able to control it. Or maybe that he can control it, but then maybe once, kind of like how we've seen like in some vampire stories, how blood controls the monster. Like we see, like, I know, like an example for Vampire Diaries, there's, they reference vampires who can't control their lust for blood as rippers. So once they taste blood, they can't control their actions. They end up going on murder sprees. So, same. And so I'm thinking maybe when he was talking about the part where he has this urge to consume human blood, that maybe that's going to tie into, you know, once he tastes it, he goes full vampire and he goes crazy. He can't control any of his murder sprees or anything. So it's going to be very interesting too, because we see him in talks with the law, which I have questions about that character. I can't even remotely begin to ask or answer. But the thing is the law going to be more of so trying to stop him and put him down, or is they're going to try and help him? Because he has no, because like you said,
they're probably going to want to research him. Is what I feel.
Yeah, like I said, they want to
what the fuck he did.
Want
to
find
himself.
Out to himself did to himself. Some want to control it and turn him into a weapon. And yeah, it's gonna be
which
very interesting.
Might be why we see Michael Keaton's character, because in the first movie he was he's a villain in the universe, right?
Yeah. So what I'm thinking maybe because
so maybe he's acting like he's a good guy, but he's really getting there to get the information of what's going on and use him for, evil.
Yeah, so it's going to be weird, because the setting of it kind of looked as though that maybe, when he said that to Morbius, that maybe it could have been during, a high-stakes prison transport. Maybe they brought in Michael Keaton's character just for, more questioning and everything, and then, you see Michael Morbius coming in, and maybe that they had an interaction when he was being transported back to prison, or maybe he's being transported somewhere else for questioning, which it's going to be very interesting to see. And I know that this movie comes out, and again, going back to, everything to do with the multiverse, especially because of Michael Keaton and the references of Venom and a poster of Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, that it's going to give us plenty of room, I believe, to speculate on what could happen, especially because it releases after Spider-Man No Way Home does. So that's just going to even lead into more questions, and maybe even more answers we'll probably get from Morbius. And I really hope that a lot of the questions that we have regarding the multiverse get answered within those movies. My watch just went off. Sorry. Within those two movies.
Yeah, she was sorry too.
She was sorry. But yeah, I know you're not, but I'm very excited to see this movie, and I can't wait for it. I wanted it to come out this year. I was very excited to see it this year, and got COVID postponed, and I was very saddened by that, but I'm very excited to see this movie and what will come from it.
So one other thing I was interested about with it is that Jared Leto is the main character, or Leto, however you want to say it.
I pronounce it
Jared
Leto.
He's the main character. Who is a villain. And he also is a villain in the DC universe.
Not anymore.
Well, he played a villain in the DC universe. Not that he's current, but he played the Joker.
Yes, he did.
And he's playing this character. I don't think we have too many actors that have done both in
we have
DC
quite a few.
And the Marvel universe.
We have quite a few. One big name, Zachary Levi, right? Levi?
What did he do in Marvel?
He was in Thor.
Which one?
He was in 2 and 3.
I don't think I saw either of those.
You didn't see Thor Ragnarok?
Oh, Ragnarok was 2?
No, Ragnarok was 3.
Oh, I saw Ragnarok.
So Zachary Levi was actually recasted. He wasn't recasted. He was the recasting. Because I cannot recall the actor's name. But instead of continuing his contract with Marvel, he went to Once Upon a Time. And he played Prince Charming Once Upon a Time. I don't know if you're familiar with
Once
Upon a
Time is Disney.
Yes, but he didn't continue his contract with Marvel. So Zachary Levi took his spot as the same character, but just different actors now. And well, Thor, you didn't see him much in Thor 3 because right when Hela gets to Asgard and she kills those two guys, and he's one of them. He's the one at the end, the sword.
Okay, so
I'm having trouble placing his name.
He was probably more in 2 than
he was in a lot more in 2.
Okay, so that's why I kind of don't know.
But yeah, no, it is interesting to see actors go from.
He was in Shazam.
Yep,
over in DC, and Shazam 2 is coming out.
Yep.
There's too many others. That's why I'm like,
I can't recall.
It's very interesting when they do both. To me, because that's not really a thing.
Just versatile actors. I mean, wherever they want to go.
It's direct competition.
I mean, whatever role they want to play and whatever
money
gets offered.
Money,
Well, I mean, actually, no, you see it there. Michael Rooker. Suicide Squad 2, the new Suicide
but
Squad movie.
He's in the new Suicide Squad movie because of issues with Marvel, wasn't it?
No. No. He wasn't in Suicide Squad.
Did he go over there because of James Gunn? I think.
No, he was killed off in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 before the issues with James Gunn arose.
I don't know. I feel like he's going to be in this new one. I don't know. No. I feel like I saw him in a thing, but I'm probably stupid. I'm very stupid.
Yeah, a little bit.
A lot of bit, not a little bit. But this movie's directed by Daniel Espinosa. And he's got 11 director credits. His most recent movie was in 2017. It was called Life. That was probably the biggest movie that he has done, I could tell. And it had Jake Gyllenhaal, Rebecca Ferguson, and Ryan Reynolds. So it seems like it would be a really big movie. Was never heard of it.
I believe that was, a movie like a when they're in space. Yeah, they're in space. Yes. No, I did believe I did. I saw a little bit of that. I had not seen too much of it. I've seen clips here and there, but I did like the everything he did to, as a director with that movie. The shots were incredible, and I just from watching the Morbius trailers, I'm very excited to see his directing style bringing it to the Marvel universe, and I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Well, we won't.
I will. I will see how it goes. All right, and our next topic of conversation is something I'm quite excited about. I know Chris, you know, as we have aforementioned, Chris hates anything to do with horror movies.
Nope.
But I'm quite excited for this because I've been a longtime fan of the video games and the film franchise that came before it, its predecessors, which is Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. Now, I, for one, everything about this movie, I'm just completely excited for, from the story and where they're taking it off. Like I believe it's going to be a revamp of the entire movie franchise. And what I think they're going to do with this is that they're really going to be true to the roots of from the video games, which we didn't really quite see too many of that with the other movies that came out. And I'm very excited from the story to the cast, and I'm seeing what the future may hold for this movie if all said and done is this movie does well. Which I believe it will if we got longtime running fans of the video game series and of the other movies. I believe it's just going to be a phenomenal game all around, movie all around. And I'm very excited about it. So what were your thoughts with watching the trailer, Chris? I know you're not really into horror movies, but I know, you know, we rewatched the trailer together again, and I know you got a little bit more immersed into the story.
Yes. So the first trailer I saw, which was the one that was like recommended, which was the latest one, was like a minute long. It was just, it was called the Nightmare Version. And it was basically just showing you the creatures. There wasn't much story, so I was like,
yeah, all the monsters, yeah.
What the
zombies.
Fuck is, like, there's no story. But then we rewatched like the longer one, and I was like, okay, I get the story a little bit more now. But this movie comes out November 24th.
Which I'm very excited for.
Very soon.
I will be seeing that. We're going to be away when it comes out.
Yes.
In Florida, which I, to be quite frank, I if we have a free day, I may want to go see it. I may go
you
see
have
it.
Fun. You have fun with that. Fuck off. I'm good. But yeah, it's based on the movie, the video games. I've played one. I played Biohazard, which I played for like 45 minutes because I was forced to.
Yep, because you streamed.
It was, so I was doing a stream and I was like, if I hit this goal, I will play this game. Fucking worst idea of my life, because I don't do scary shit, and you know, this is kind of what happens when you have me playing scary games.
Fuck me. No. Get the fuck out of here, bitch. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that's definitely what happens when I have to play scary games. So, yeah, you can tell. Not the biggest fan.
Yes, you would not have even lasted playing the sequel game to Resident Evil Biohazard, let alone finish Resident Evil Biohazard.
I got to the point where she was, like, stabbing you with, like, a stake.
I think it was a screwdriver. I think she takes a screwdriver and starts hacking at
you.
It gets worse.
But I played in easy, right? And I just wanted to be over with it, so I was just like, kill me. And this lady, I'm not going to lie, she stabbed me probably 50 times before I died because I decided easy. I was like, oh, easy, it'll be less scary. No.
No.
I just don't die as quickly.
Yeah, you just don't die as quickly.
Yeah, I was not happy. Easier. No. I was like hugging the girl and she was not killing me and I was done with it that day.
But what's fascinating about that game and the predecessor that actually just came out earlier this year, Resident Evil 8 Village, is that they have tie-ins to the origins of the virus that is the cause of all the monsters being created and all the testing done from Umbrella Corporation. But it shows that the Umbrella Corporation now is run by Chris Redfield, who is going to be one of the main characters in this movie. And he's actually, I believe, one of the only returning like major characters in this Resident Evil 7 and 8. It actually ends in Resident Evil 7 with him running a new and improved Umbrella Corporation, which is they're trying to clean up what old Umbrella did and all the fucked up shit that they did and fucked up the world with. And he's running it. And he really helps out the main character along with his wife, and he helps him out in that at the end of that game, and in the beginning of the eighth game, and then he plays a big part in helping the main character in those games, Ethan Winters, get to the end of his journey and the end of Resident Evil Village. But I'm going on to that now. I'm very excited to see that this movie is based in 1998. Yeah. It's like when. Basically, the start of everything's happening.
Before I was born.
Yeah, before you were born, before I was born. And right...
I wish it had destroyed the whole country so I wouldn't have been born.
Fuck you.
Great.
But I'm very excited to see that, you know, we get a movie heavily focused around the origin of the virus. And we get to see all these great characters. We get Claire and Chris Redfield. And we get Jill Valentine. And we get Ada Wong. And we get Leon Kennedy. I'm going to talk about the cast now. It is phenomenal casting because when this, you know, is based, they're all just like not kids, but they're not, you know, matured in age and they're training. You know, they're probably right around the same, the good casting form. They're all in their like the mid to late 20s. And, you know, I believe that, you know, Robbie Amell, he's playing Chris Redfield. I believe that's a phenomenal casting. He kind of looks almost exactly, you pull up a picture from any of the video games of Chris Redfield, he kind of looks just like a younger Chris Redfield. I cannot remember her name. She was in The Maze Runner, though. Kaya Scodario? Is how you pronounce that? Kaya Scodario? She's playing Claire Redfield, his sister. And right from the trailer, you see their chemistry as brother and sister. It looks like they're going to really click in this role, and it really seems as though they're going to show how much they care about each other and want to protect each other during all this unbelievably hard hardships that are going to come to them when battling through the city as a resident of Raccoon City. And then we have Jill Valentine, played by Hannah John Common. And I believe she was in a Marvel movie recently. She was in Ant-Man and the Wasp. I believe she played Ghost, which she played a phenomenal character in that. And then we have Lily Gao as Ada Wong, unbelievable castings throughout. And then we have Avan Jogia, a.k.a. Beck from Victorious. And it seemed as though in the past couple of years, he's actually really, really blossomed from, you know, just moving on from kids shows. You know, he was in Zombieland 2. I believe he was in another show that I believe premiered on HBO Max. I cannot remember the name of it for the life of me. But he did really well in that. And I believe him cast as Leon Kennedy, it's going to be such a great cast, and it's gonna be so enjoyable to watch, especially with all them. And an interesting cast, actually, not my favorite casting for the role, but I know you have some, you know, consumer experience in watching Tom Hopper.
Yep, Tom Hopper from Umbrella Academy.
Umbrella Corporation.
Yep. Perfect tie-in.
It ties in. It's all connected.
Yeah, but he was fantastic in that. So he definitely has the skill to pull off a good performance.
I don't doubt that. I believe that he will play a very, very good performance. But I believe, you know, we had such a great casting with all this. He's still a great casting choice. But another thing that adds into and ties into my opinions on their casting choice is that almost every single one of these characters looks exactly like their video game counterpart. He is probably the only character playing Albert Wesker who does not really look like Wesker. I mean, it could change, you know.
Which is very different from Uncharted, which, you know, well, I mean, not really different, like you were saying. So
here and there, you know, because Tom Holland looks exactly like Nathan Drake.
But
and then Mark Wahlberg is solid. Mark Wahlberg doesn't. Yeah. Well,
so,
and like I said, with that, you know, it could change if we get a sequel. It could, you know, he could, Mark Wahlberg could have grown a mustache. Yeah. And the sequel, maybe Tom Hopper will grow his hair out and have the slick back look with the sunglasses. But I cannot remember the name of the actor, but in the original Resident Evil series, that actor who played Wesker looked uncannily similar to, it was uncanny seeing the resemblance. It looked like they literally just copy and pasted his face.
Well, so here's the thing too, right? When you're trying to match things up to look right, you might not be able to find someone that looks right that can actually do the job and actually give a good performance. So they might have hit a snag there where everyone that looked the part couldn't actually deliver a decent enough performance.
Yeah, it's understandable.
To fit that role. So that might be why they did so good on others, but, you know, his look doesn't perfectly fit. And, you know, we've seen in different movies in the past, you know, not everything matches up, but ends up being amazing in the long run.
Well, I don't doubt that he'll be an amazing performer in this role. And like I said, you know, if they decide to do a sequel, which I believe they would, because in this movie,
won't see that either.
Yeah, I'm gonna make you see this at least.
No, I will shit myself.
But I'm very interested to see. I'm hoping, I pray to God that they are completely true to the source material with the games, and that they spark a new revamp in a franchise with these movies. Because, you know, we got all these characters: Claire, Chris Redfield, Jill Valentine, Ada Wong, Wesker, and we have Leon S. Kennedy. And we that just leaves more room for even more characters to be introduced into the Resident Evil verse. And I'm very curious to see, because it seems as though there's a shot in the trailer that looks almost identical to an image from the first video game of Resident Evil, which I was very excited. As soon as I saw that, I paused the trailer, kind of jumped up a little bit in excitement. I was very excited about it. And, you know, there's so many directions this movie can go in, because being based in Raccoon City and introducing all these characters as such, like them in their prime when this all happened, as they're so young and they have the room and age to just continually make these movies until, you know, either they kill off their characters or something else happens.
That's the question: is are they going to follow the games to a T with this being like game number one?
Well, I feel like they won't follow it down to a T, but they'll make it pretty damn close. What I'll tell you one thing, and this is my prediction for it.
Because like we saw with Uncharted, it kind of just seemed like they were putting all the games together. I wonder if this is going to follow.
Well, I feel like they won't. I mean, I know a lot more about Resident Evil than I do with the Uncharted franchise. So one thing I'm calling this is going to happen. This is my prediction for the movie.
Oh, that's some bold statements.
You find out at the end of the first video game that Albert, even though, you know, you're working as a team and a unit, and this, they're trying to stop Umbrella from committing
zombifying
people and testing their bioweapons on the community in Raccoon City. In the first game, I believe it was only three of them. And it was Claire and Chris Redfield and Albert Wesker. And you end up finding out that Albert Wesker this whole time was working as a deep agent for Umbrella. Mm-hmm. And that he actually betrays them. And we see in the trailer that, you know, we got the team of Claire and Chris. I believe Jill Valentine is also in it as well. In their team, and the Albert Wesker, and you have another man. I believe it's Richard Aachen is the character's name. And they, you know, they go into the mansion. I think later on is when they meet up with Leon. But I do believe with all the similarities I see from the trailer and from the video game, I do believe that we can see sequels to this movie coming out. Especially because I do believe seeing all the similarities that we will see a betrayal amongst the team, and I do believe that we'll see maybe Richard Aachen will die. And I do believe that either if Albert Wesker isn't responsible for it, he will try and betray them in a certain way, trying to either kill Chris, Jill, or Claire Redfield and try and sabotage them in some way. And if that happens, my prediction will go down to a T and I'll be very happy. And then I'll say that one thing, it was going to spark a franchise, and I will be so unbelievably excited if that comes to truth. I'm very, very happy about this movie. I'm very excited for it. And again, the casting is great, and I'm very excited to see Neil McDonough in this movie as well. I've seen him in so many, such a comic book nerd thing to do is to recognize Neil McDonough. He's been in Marvel, he's been in DC, he's been so much to do with, you know, us comic book nerds. You know, he was in Captain America, played Dugan, and he played slipping my mind right now, the character he played in Arrow, but he played a phenomenal character in Arrow, he played a villain, and it was great. He played in The Flash, played in DC's Legends of Tomorrow, and every single role he's been in, he just absolutely killed it. And I'm very excited to see what he does in this movie.
So this movie is directed by, I'm going to screw this name up, Jonas Johannes, something in that realm. I'm going to say Johannes
Roberts.
He has 15 director credits. His two most notable films is 47 Meters Down, the first and the second.
Okay.
And all of his films are horror titles. So he definitely has, like, the horror...
the grasp of the horror movie, yeah. which is great to see with a horror movie director, especially because mm-hmm. you want to have... especially because he only has, you know, 47 Meters and 47 Meters Down, like, all those, like, the sequel to it.
Yep.
And I think this is going to be another just slam dunk for him. I think this would be a great movie to really show off, especially because he can do more with this. You know, he has such a wide variety to go off of from source material. And, you know, all these actors and actresses are incredible in this movie. And I think they're going to give their all in this performances. And they're just going to really push it to the limit. He's going to push it to the limit. And I believe the directing style is going to be great. The effects already look great with all the different monsters. And even from seeing the Nightmare trailer that you were talking about, I watched that a couple times as well. And it really gave me Conjuring and Insidious vibes, which is, I don't know if you wouldn't know. You never seen
it. Nope, wouldn't know.
But it gave me those kind of vibes, especially with the ticking aspect. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Like,
and the fucking the camera movements. Creepy little bitch that did the back. Yeah, oh my the back God. Ends. Yeah,
it's. I think it's gonna be great. I think we're gonna see a wide variety of different monsters it too, definitely which looked would be very cool. Interesting.
You know, the sets looked fantastic, and the makeup, the CGI, and all that looked really cool.
It's going to be very awesome. See, I not only is this going to be a story filled with a great story, it's going to tell a phenomenal origin story that's going to spark a franchise, I'm praying to God, but we're also going to see incredible action, and which a lot of the first Resident Evil movie that came out a while ago, it came out probably almost 20 years ago now. Excuse me, sorry. And it didn't have too much action in it. But, like, just from seeing this, you know, we have Claire and Chris Redfield getting ready. You know, we see Claire with a shotgun, and we see a bunch of guns going off, and we see, you know, them storming the Spencer Mansion with assault rifles, automatic rifles. We see a helicopter crash through the fucking mansion. And I just think it's going to be great all-around movie with plenty of action, plenty of horror, plenty of suspense, and plenty of story development. And I'm very, very, very excited to see this movie.
And I'm very, very not.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
But yes, that comes out on November 24th. 24th. Very, very close. Alrighty, the next thing to talk about is probably what I'm most excited about. It is the Book of Boba Fett coming on December 29th to Disney Plus. Now, this is a 8-episode series.
It is 8 episodes.
And I feel like it's going to be exactly like Mandalorian where...
Not at all.
Well, here's what I was saying. Each episode is going to have a different director.
Okay, so that's what I was expect.
So, you know, just cutting me off.
Yeah,
you know?
Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you.
Fuck your ideas.
yeah, I think each one's going to have a different. You know, I already know the directors for the first four, and they're all different. And we'll get into that a little bit later talking about.
So, sorry to cut you off here, but a big question about it. This is another John Favreau piece, right?
Yes.
So, I know not only did he, you know, have a heavy hand with The Mandalorian, but he also did that with Taika Waititi. Does Taika Waititi have any credits as of right now? Do we know
not
about?
Not right now.
Really? Interesting.
Not right now. But every director that has been announced also has directed an episode of The Mandalorian.
Do we have a Dave Filoni episode?
We do.
Oh, that is
a Dave Filoni episode.
Filoni. I did.
Episode
that
2
name.
Is a Dave Filoni episode. Which Sign Dave Filoni?
Let's get right to episode
Star
two.
Wars is like Dave Filoni's baby.
Yeah, Clone Wars.
you know, he was in charge of Clone Wars and Rebels, and, you know, he's very much been, like, the forefront of the Star Wars universe.
What I'm very glad to see with
and these... even, I'm going to cut you off.
Fuck you.
Even sorry. When Ashley Eckstein, who plays Ahsoka Tano.
Yep.
Which, if you guys don't know, I haven't mentioned it on the podcast. This last weekend, I mentioned it was busy. I went to Comic-Con, and there was a panel with Ashley Eckstein and Matt Lanter, which we'll talk about next week. But this week, I'll just mention this briefly. Ashley Eckstein was mentioning how much Star Wars is like Dave's baby. And she really, every time she has a question about Star Wars, she goes to him. And he's the one to answer.
Gotcha.
Her okay. stuff. So yeah, he's definitely like the all-knowing Star Wars person when it comes to it.
Well, that's what, you know, before you rudely cut me off.
You cut me off first, bitch!
Yeah, you know, fair. Okay, no, but that's what I was going to say, is that I'm very, very glad that, one, the responsibilities of creating an immensely large Star Wars universe, like an even larger Star Wars universe mm-hmm. within Disney Plus with these shows, I'm very glad... I'm
so excited for the shows.
...that Jon Favreau and Taika Waititi are... practically take the helm now, especially Dave Filoni is now going to be part of that team. They basically, it's like George Lucas basically handed them, you know, the golden lightsaber and said thank you, and it's like, here.
Well, they've been killing it, you know.
They've been slaying
the hard work. Definitely, you know, pays off when they are producing such high quality projects. You can see their love and passion exactly. in the film.
Which is great to me, too, that they bring on directors who understand Star
passionate.
Wars. They're
yes.
passionate about it, and they want to tell a great story in just one episode, and they do it flawlessly. I can't even recall one single episode of The Mandalorian that I did not enjoy. That if I had yeah. to rate them out of 10, I cannot even rank an episode below an 8. Nope. Like, they're either all 8 or higher. And I'll tell you, one thing that really got me excited to hear the announcement of the Book of Boba Fett was the episode, I believe it was episode either 7 or 8 of season 2, when Mando takes Grogu to the altar, and he's trying to, you know, send out the beacon yep. to alert Luke Skywalker. Sorry, spoiler alerts, guys, if you haven't seen season 2 of The Mandalorian.
Hey, what are you doing?
What are you doing? It's been out for so long. Go watch it.
I finished that day one.
He did. I followed it weekly. But I was very... That episode, probably hands down my favorite episode of season 2. Because, you know, we know the legend of the great bounty hunter Boba Fett. And we know of his father, Jango Fett. But... And I was like, oh, wow, okay, Boba Fett's in it. That's cool. You know, it's a little callback, you know? But then I watched the episode, and then afterwards I was like, holy fucking shit. He did that. He did unbelievable fucking... like, his fighting style was unbelievable with just a fucking stick from the sand people on Tatooine. Mm-hmm. And he's fucking bashing in all these stormtroopers' helmets. He's just stabbing them, beating the shit out of them. And then he gets his fucking armor, and he does fucking unbelievable shit. It's like God, he turned on God mode. And he just fucking annihilates an entire army of stormtroopers, makes them retreat, and says, fuck you, you're not retreating, and shoots a fucking rocket out of his jetpack. It's mm-hmm. something we had never seen nor expect from a live-action adaptation of this bounty hunter. And once I saw that, I was like, holy fucking shit. This is incredible. I want to see more Boba Fett do this shit. And then, you know, the ending of The Mandalorian Season 2, we see the teaser for the Book of Boba Fett. And I was mm-hmm. like, fuck yeah, sign me the fuck up. I was like, yes, absolutely, feed me more.
Yeah, I'm super pumped. I definitely, right when that announcement, I was like, yeah, I'm excited. And now, we have a trailer.
We do have a trailer. Unfortunately, I've been so busy, I've not been able to watch it. But I tell you one thing, I'll probably even mention it in next week's episode. You will hear my opinion about that trailer.
So, I basically just kind of did, like, a little summary so that you can kind of understand what happened.
Yep.
So, in the trailer, basically, to preface it, Jabba has passed. So
yep.
Jabba's no longer... He's dead. Dead motherfucker.
Rest in peace. Okay.
Rest in hell. And basically, Boba Fett wants to rule Tatooine. He wants
yep.
to come in and take over.
And now we have a crime boss who's going to take over the syndicate. And not only is he going to send out... all these like lackeys to do his bidding, he's also going to be like, you know what? I don't trust you motherfuckers. I'm going to go do this shit myself. And you know what? Yep. He can't. Yeah. He's got this fucking armor. Even without the armor. He'll
get the job done. A lot of the trailer was him like reasoning with Jabba's like former people that are in rule currently. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was him reasoning with them of why he should be in charge.
And that's the thing that makes...
And trying to make a deal with them.
That's the thing that's going to make Boba Fett so dangerous, is that not only can he beat the shit out of somebody, but he's gonna have that like almost ambassador effect about him. He's gonna be able to, you know, resolve all these issues with not violence but with words. And you know, if his words don't work, he's gonna resort to that violence. He's gonna be a fucking force to be reckoned with. So I wouldn't want to be in the other end of the deal against Boba Fett. Definitely. Fuck that.
Nah, fuck that. I'm excited to see Tatooine as like the main focus in a project.
Is it Tatooine?
It is.
Confirmed.
Well, okay. I mean, he's coming and taking over where Jabba lived, right?
Was Jabba?
And Jabba was in Tatooine.
Was it okay? Okay,
I questioned it myself, so I looked it up.
You did look it up. Okay, I thought it was a different planet. So
I questioned it myself, so I looked it up.
Same shit, you know, sand.
Yes, sand. Yep. So I'm excited to see that come back because really. We only had that as a main focus in one movie.
No.
Yeah. Is it two?
I mean, so we had less of a main focus in the second movie, but no, wasn't Luke on Tatooine and in the fourth one? Most positive he's in Tatooine.
Yeah, so that was the main one that I recall. Phantom but Menace. Then the other one is when they picked up Anakin. Isn't that from Tatooine as well?
Yeah, it's Phantom Menace.
Yeah, so two movies had... But no, it but then wasn't really focused.
Goes back to Tatooine. He goes back to Tatooine, the second one, and the third one, actually.
Did he?
Yes, because he takes Leia to Tatooine to like find his mother, and then he ends up murdering all the sand people, remember? Because they find out that his mother was sold to sand people, and they killed her. And so Anakin went on a fucking rampage and killed sand people. And then third one, it shows Obi-Wan dropping off baby Luke to his aunt and uncles... On Tatooine. And I think
actually... That was like... So I feel like the first movie a lot was based on Tatooine. And then...
A good portion of it, yes.
In the next movies was just like small scenes that occurred on Tatooine. But this is going to be back to like mainly focusing on Tatooine. That's kind of where I'm getting at. Because I enjoy Tatooine and the stories that have come with it. The deep history that we've learned from it. You know, from the market in this village, the main village.
Were they in Tatooine in the sixth one? Where, you know, Boba Fett crawls out of the Sandar pit?
I don't know.
I think it was. But they were in Tatooine, though, in Mandalorian season two, right?
I don't recall. I'm questioning it.
I think they were. I think when they have the deal with the dragon.
Yeah, I don't know.
They were, because then they worked with the sand people, right? They worked with the sand people. Yep, so that was Tatooine. So we did get to see already, like, you know, we got like a little trailer glimpse of it of before the Book of Boba Fett. So that's really cool to see.
Yeah, because that's where that episode, I think, is where we meet Boba Fett, isn't it? Like the first time.
We see him. We don't really get to meet him. Well, you know, diehard fans who are like, holy shit, that's gotta be fucking Boba Fett. Which I was like, oh my fucking god! I was sitting with my girlfriend. We were watching. I was like, holy fucking shit, it's Boba Fett! I'm fucking pointing my fingers like crazy. I was going crazy about it.
Boba Fett's an interesting character over the years because he's been played by so many people. You know, we had young Boba Fett that was played by oh my goodness, I'm gonna blank his name. I had it in my head. It's already gone. But Logan.
I don't know.
Daniel Logan.
I honestly couldn't.
It's tell Daniel you. Logan. He played young Boba Fett. So we had that on. Oh my god! Why is my brain broken? Camonian. Oh my god! What is happening?
Kamino.
Yes, that one. I'm so out of it.
Oh boy!
It's a little late. Okay, my brain.
I do enjoy it.
On Kamino, we had the young, and then we've had him in. I
don't know what you mean. Oh, stopwatch!
She's like a bitch.
She wants to put input in.
Then we had Bespin. You know, version. I think we've had like five or six different people play Boba Fett over the years.
That probably sounds about right. But I do enjoy the casting because, you know, they brought back the actor who played Jango Fett. This is the actor.
Is it?
Who played Jango? I was almost positive this is the actor who played Jango Fett. And it works out perfectly because, you know, now he's like, he has his head, he shaved his head. And, you know, as you know, like, they were also the clones.
It works well that way because
he's his son.
Yeah. So, but the premise of Boba Fett and Jango Fett is that it's clone technology. It's like a exact replica of, you know, the previous.
Yep.
So having him play the son now at an older age definitely makes sense to keep the look of it.
Yeah.
You know, true.
Exactly, yeah.
So my next thing was that Star Wars has always gone above and beyond with the effects, and just the visuals have always been so stunning. And I'm so excited to see that they're keeping that true with this. There were shots that were, like, breathtaking. There was a shot where they were, like, looking over this city. And right. it was like, a sunken-in city.
Interesting.
And I was like, that is, like, that must have taken so long to, like, visually, like, draw out and imagine. Because it was, like, an entire city.
Yeah.
In, like a pit.
Huh.
And I was like, wow. And that probably was, like, a second. So the amount of time they spent on that 1 second must have been crazy.
Yeah, but that might be a bigger part of the story once, you know, we see the episodes come out.
That'll probably be, you know, the aerial view of it probably won't be there too much.
Yeah, no, I understand.
So
that part.
For them to like spend that much on it was a giant city in a sand pit.
I gotta watch this trailer.
It was probably like over 100 houses in this like pit. So the amount of time to create that just for like a second on screen must have been labor intensive.
Yeah.
So let's talk about directors. So like I mentioned, every director that has been announced, there's only been 4 announced. Every single one has done an episode of The Mandalorian.
Gotcha.
So the director of episode number 1 is Robert Rodriguez, who has 52 director credits under his belt. He was the director of Chapter 14 of The Mandalorian. Interesting. He was also the director of Sharkboy and Lavagirl, which is like my childhood.
Oh, boy.
But he also came back and did, you know, the, you know, sequel to Sharkboy and Lavagirl, okay, which was a Netflix original called We Can Be Heroes.
Gotcha.
And he is also the director of Alita Battle Angel, which came out just a couple years ago. And had very mixed opinions.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see it. I didn't want to see it. It just did not look like my cup of tea. I heard nothing but good things. But
I wanted to see it. I just never made it to the theater.
Understand? Yeah.
There was so much more movies that year that were like
was
more
it, was it
on
2020
my.
Movie? Or was it 2019?
No, 2019. I think.
But, no, you know what it was? It peeled into 2020. That's what it was.
Yeah,
it peeled in.
It there was a lot more. That interests me more than that.
And yeah, I get what you mean.
So it just never made it there. But he is going to be directing the first episode. Then we move on to the second episode, which is Dave Filoni's episode. Who he has 7 credits, director credits, which isn't much. But, you know, you got to think he did The Mandalorian, he did Clone
He's
Wars, he did
Clone
Rebels.
Wars, yep.
So he did episodes 1, 5, and 13 of The Mandalorian. He did 24 episodes of Clone Wars.
Yep.
As well as the Clone Wars movie. The one.
Yep.
And then he has 50 episodes of Rebels, which is Star Wars Rebels, which was a fantastic series.
That's more than half. That's more than half.
And then he also, not Star Wars related, he directed 9 episodes of Avatar The Last Airbender.
I did know that. I was actually very excited to be watching that when it was released on Netflix, and I saw, oh my god, Dave Filoni. I was like, holy shit.
And then episode 3 is Jon Favreau's baby.
Yes.
He has 27 director credits, including, of course, Iron Man 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Elf, which is a classic. Now we're moving into Christmas. That'll be on everywhere.
You know what's crazy to me? That movie is turning 18 years old this year.
Yeah.
That is crazy to me.
It's old. Have you seen Will Ferrell lately? Like, he's old.
He is old.
he is in charge of The Lion King, the live action remake.
He was, yeah, and I love that movie.
He also did the live action of Jungle Book, which has been confirmed that Jungle Book 2 is also coming with him at the helm.
Yes, sir.
So I'm excited about that. And he did chapter 9 of The Mandalorian. So he only had one chapter in The Mandalorian, which is kind of shocking to me.
Don't also forget, too, coming up, we'll be talking about him and his role in Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yep.
He will be in that.
And then chapter 4 is going to be Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yep, she directed... Wait, hold on, let me guess. It was in season 2.
Right? I don't know, I just have chapter numbers written down.
Well, remember, because I'm almost positive Mandalorian was also 8 per season.
Okay.
So, I'm going to guess chapter 11.
Yep.
Was that right? Mm-hmm. Oh, look at that. I know, because we've talked about this episode. Here's
one thing you don't know. She's directed 2 episodes of The Mandalorian.
Oh, was it one in season 1?
Yes.
Episode 7?
Nope.
Was that close?
Nope. Episode 4.
You literally just saw me put up 4. You literally saw me. That was my second guess.
She directed episode 4 and episode 11 of The Mandalorian.
I remember talking to you about episode 11.
She only has 10 director credits.
Yeah, but that's... She's
very new to directing.
Well, she is, because she did a lot with in front of the camera work.
Yeah, so before. She is an actor, including Jurassic World. Yep. And all of the Jurassic World properties, Lego games, everything. She's done the Claire Deering. That is her character in anything Jurassic World related. She was also in Spider-Man 3. She played Gwen Stacy.
She did, yeah.
She has 42 actor credits. So
another movie that would kind of like tie in, sorry to cut you off, but would tie into a lot of, like, you know, comic booky kind of thing, like sci-fi. I think the first movie I actually did see with her in, I believe, was Terminator Salvation.
Yep, she was in Terminator Salvation.
Terminator Salvation, 2009, I believe.
One other movie she was in, you might not know this, because it was one of her first movies. The only other movie
I could think of was 50-50 with Seth Rogen and Joe Gordon-Levitt.
One of her first movies, which was directed by Ron Howard, who is her father.
Yep.
And Ron Howard directed Solo. So he's got tie-ins with the Star Wars universe as well.
Okay.
But Ron Howard directed a movie, a little movie, that you might not have heard of. How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
The fuck? Was that little a fucking movie. Joke?
Super
fuck
little.
You. You're a bitch. You're a little
but
bitch.
But she actually was in, one of her first acting roles was, she was in How the Grinch Stole Christmas as a who?
Was it the Jim Carrey one, the live action?
Yes.
Okay, yes.
She
okay.
was a who.
Interesting.
And that was one of her very first acting roles.
I believe it. I mean, she could play who? That movie came out, what, 2000? 2001?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So, 20 years.
A while ago. But to see her, like, start her career as a who, and then be one of blossom. The biggest people in the Jurassic World universe.
Yep.
Because I think she has, like, she's got 42 acting credits. I think well over 10 have to do with Jurassic World. Because all those credits included all of the video games.
Yeah, and but there haven't been a ton of video games about it.
I saw that so many times. When I was looking through IMDb, I was like, I didn't know they had this many Jurassic
World. Well, they had a Lego Jurassic World. They had the Lego Jurassic Park game come out, and I'm pretty sure Jurassic World was in that. And then they had, what are they on, the third movie? I believe, for this one. And then, I mean, unless she was in, like, the Evolve games, like, you know, like Jurassic World Evolved, I believe is what they're called.
She was in, so, let's see, I'm pulling it up because I want to be correct here. She was in Jurassic World Evolved 2, which is the brand new one that's coming out soon. She was in Jurassic World The Ride.
That counts as an actor credit, yeah, I guess.
Jurassic World Evolution, the original. Then you've got Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. You've got Lego Jurassic World The Indominus Escape. So that's already 5. She was in Lego Dimensions as the voice of Claire Deering.
Oh my god, Lego Dimensions.
She was in Lego Jurassic World and regular Jurassic World. So 8 projects as this one character.
You were close.
Also, one thing to note looking through here that I didn't realize. She was in an episode of Arrested Development, which I really enjoyed. Arrested Development.
I like that she was. I can't.
She played herself.
Now. Oh, did she?
She played herself.
I don't remember that episode. I can't remember that episode.
But yeah, I'm just super excited about this.
Yeah, I'm very excited to watch it.
Awesome. And
it's got to fill the void somehow. We're not getting a Mandalorian season 3 until the end of next year, so it's got to fill my fix.
Yo, definitely. But I'm so excited. And we'll see how it goes. So now it's time for our family friendly portion, which we'll still probably fucking swear during it. But
no, yeah, you just fucking did.
I know I did.
Yeah, fuck.
Point. But yeah, I like to have a family friendly movie we talk about every week because there's some good ones. But Sing 2 coming out on December 22nd. I really enjoyed the first one. It was. I feel like I'm gonna enjoy the first one better than the second. Just because the story, but also this one does have a pretty decent story to it.
I'll tell you this, I can agree with you on that, not for the same reason, but I can agree with you that because this trailer was so long when it first came out.
3.5 minutes.
3.5 minutes trailer, almost 4 minutes long of a trailer. I was like, okay, I don't think I need to see this because I just watched the whole
breakdown of the movie.
Because, yes. You know, I mean... You know, we see, is it Buster Moon is the lion? Yes. Right? Matthew McConaughey?
Buster Moon is the,
He's the lion.
Koala.
Oh, wait, no.
What? Yes.
What's the name of the lion?
The lion's name is Clay Calloway.
That's who it is.
Played by Bono.
Bono, that's right. I feel as though seeing...
Here's the thing, though, before you get into that. The first trailer was so much story. The second trailer felt like I was watching a different movie.
I don't know about that.
It was different.
To me, the first trailer was the whole story.
Yeah. But then the second one was like it was Sing 3 they were showing me. It was so much, there was no story in the third trailer, in the second trailer. Like the first one was very lion based, right?
I mean,
the second one, no talk about the lion at all.
Well, I feel as though that, you know, the only way that it'll save, like, the first trailer from seeing that it could possibly, like, you know, just give away almost the entire thing is that if they gave that as a misdirection, then it's not going to be, it's going to be longer than we thought, and they're not going to spend nearly as much time on that, and that Clay Calloway is actually going to do that, like, right from the beginning. He's going to be like that. But...
Yeah, we'll see.
But I am excited to see a lot of the returning cast members. I love Taron Egerton. He's been in there isn't a single movie that I've seen with Taron Egerton that I did not enjoy at all.
Yeah,
and he's got a great singing voice, and I'm also excited to see Scarlett Johansson back in the role. I love Scarlett Johansson, love her everything. Reese Witherspoon, great actor. Matthew McConaughey, love him, and Eric Andre, Halsey, Pharrell Williams. He's got a great voice. He's a good guy, but
they definitely brought in some good singers because you've got Tori Kelly, you've got Halsey, you've got Bono, you've got Pharrell Williams. So they definitely tried to mix in a really good mix of singers as well as actors, and I think it's a pretty good cast here.
Yeah, I'm also very excited for Chelsea Peretti. I love Chelsea Peretti a lot, and I love everything she does. So it's gonna be a good movie. You know, there's gonna be, you know, a lot of free time during our winter break. So, you know, and we got a great selection of movies coming out within that month. You know, we got Spider-Man, we got this coming out, and a bunch of other movies. You know, Resident Evil Raccoon City will still be in theaters, I bet. So, you know, I'll have quite this selection to go to choose from when I decide to go to the movie theaters. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited for that. I didn't as well enjoy the first one, the first movie. I watched it. I can't tell you how many times I watched it when it was on Netflix. I believe it was on Netflix, right?
I don't remember.
I think it was. It was on some form of streaming service, and I watched it a bunch. So if that's the case, I probably will watch this one a lot too.
So this story to me seems like it's a very good lesson for kids. So basically, there's a lot of lessons in it, like hard work and determination, your fears.
I feel like a lot of this is going to make me depressed.
You know, maybe. Because, so the premise of it is that Calloway, which he is an older lion, he has been in hiding for 15 years after losing his wife. He moved into solitude.
Yep.
And
he lost his muse.
Yes. And the fans still after 15 years love him. And, you know, are very much like, where is he? We want the return of Clay Calloway. So the main team from movie one kind of are like, oh, we know Clay Calloway. And they kind of go on a journey. Well, a couple of them go on a journey to kind of re-inspire him to come back. And
it's such a vision journey, you know?
Yeah. The iguana and the porcupine take a road trip to this deserted house in the woods.
Okay, I love the amount of pop culture with music in this. And I tell you, the part in the trailer that cracked me up is when she's on her way to the iguana. She's on her way to find Clay Calloway, and she's listening to heavy metal, and she's singing along with it. It's great. I don't know. Every time I watch a trailer, it just cracks me up.
Yeah, and then the GPS goes, turn right now, and she goes, okay, just right off the road.
And she's driving like a sports car.
Yep.
It cracks me up.
It was great. But yeah, it seemed like I really just got the story in the trailer, like you said. It very much had most of... I usually complain that there's not enough story in a trailer.
You always fucking complain
about that.
But I
feel like
that.
I got the whole story in this trailer.
You got the entirety of
but
it.
But I am excited to see it to see if I was correct. Or to see if they had more. If there was just so much story that what they gave us was like nothing. Because that could definitely be the case. There could have just been so much written story that they were like, you know what? We can pack this with story and you're still going to be completely shocked when you get to the movies. So I don't really know. We will definitely see when that comes down. But I really thought, like I did with the first one, it's a very cute movie. And the animation style is very unique. I believe, isn't this from Illumination?
I believe it is.
And Illumination is the people behind Secret Life of Pets. And
they're behind so much.
Despicable Me. So I feel like everything that they've been a part of has kind of been a hit. But I feel like they should have let the dying horse die and not come out with a number two for this movie, I definitely think. but it's directed by Garth Jennings, who has 31 director credits. Here's what I will say about him. He has 31 director credits, and only 3 of them are actual full-length movies. Everything else is like a short. So he has Sing. He was the director of the original Sing. Then in 2005, he was the director of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Never heard of it.
And in 2007, he was the director of Son of Rambo.
Oh.
And those are the only 3 movie credits that he has as a director. And they're very spread out.
Yeah.
You know, from 2005 to now, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's very, because this is an animated movie. Sing is animated. These other 2 movies are not animated.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to see a transition from, you know, film to animation, which you don't see too often. You know, usually if you have an animated director, they focus on animation. Like Pete Docter, who is one of the leads over at Pixar. He's been doing that for years, and that is his specialty. You don't really see too many directors kind of jump from film to animation.
Yeah, that's very weird that he decided to go that route.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely want to see what else he decides to come out with in the next few years and see if there's anything interesting. And see if it is more animation or if he goes back to film, you know, in the future here. But with that being said, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us this week. Next week, we're going to be talking about quite a bit. So like I said, I went to Rhode Island Comic Con this past weekend, and Brendan was unfortunately not able to go this year.
Yeah, not this year.
But I was able to, you know, record the audio of the panels so that he could listen to them and we can actually have a full conversation about the panels on the podcast. And I went to 7 panels, only 6 recorded because I'm an idiot. And the last one, which I was so excited about to record because there was so much good stuff I wanted to talk about on the podcast, stopped recording. Fuck. And I was so mad because my backpack fell.
Yeah.
And it was on top of my backpack. And when it fell, it unrecorded. It stopped recording.
Your luck, huh?
My luck, yeah. It was on the panel was Kim Rhodes.
Okay.
Who is the mom on Suite Life of Zack and Cody.
Oh, yep, yep.
So I was so excited because everything she brought to the panel was so... There was so much that I wanted to talk about and, you know, play audio clips from. But we'll just end up talking about it a little bit because there was so much passion that she has for, you know, what she does.
Yep.
And you could definitely tell in this panel that she loves what she does and, you know. But, yeah, we'll talk about all that a little bit more next week. We'll have, like, a fully dedicated episode. But we are going away.
Yep.
In 2 weeks here.
Yeah, just a little less than 2 weeks.
Yep. So next week we'll be filming two episodes so that we have an episode releasing when we're away. Because I don't want to record on phones. Yeah. The audio quality won't be as good.
Yeah, it'll be shitty.
So, because that was the option. It was like recording.
Yeah.
But then I'd also have to edit on vacation. And I was like, you know
We'd also have to get everyone in our condo to
shut up. Yeah. Send them all to dinner and tell them to bring us food home.
We'll Uber to you guys.
But I am so excited for you guys to hear next week's episode. Thank you guys for listening on. If you haven't already, please go ahead and give us a follow over on Twitter at Sierra Convo. If you have any questions for us that you guys want us to answer, you can do so in the information section. There is a link that you will be able to find and ask us any questions. Send a voice message to us and we'll play it on the podcast and have a conversation. And if you want to help support the podcast as well, there is a support option where you can help us keep going and to do this on a weekly basis. But if you guys want to keep up with me, you can find me over on Twitter at Chris White with 2 T's.
And you can follow me at Brendan White 3.
Thank you guys so much. We'll see you guys next week. Have a good one.